Good morning, everybody, and welcome once again to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Another wonderful weekend here in Tucson. I'm sure all of our friends and listeners back there in Boston, Cape Cod, are wishing they were here instead. But then, who would be shoveling all that snow if they're out here? So somebody has to do it. You guys can do it. Anyways, Fred's out for the next couple of weeks, so it's just me and Oscar. Fred is, I guess he didn't like the cool weather here in Tucson, so he went down to Australia for the summer.
We fired him.
No. He went to Australia for the summer. He couldn't handle the cool weather here. So anyways, he'll be back in a couple of weeks. And as we do every week, we're going to look at the confused culture we live in through the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon. So if you want to join us, you can call in. We're here to listen also. The call-in number, 520-750-7456. Solomon's clear that there's a foundation for wisdom, and he sums it up in Ecclesiastes 12:13, which we've mentioned many times. He says, "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all." Fear God and keep his commandments. The commandments are the moral foundation we're to use as the basis for our response to God in order to fear him. The commandments are what provides us with the knowledge of what is considered to be right and what is considered to be wrong. That is what the foundation of our morality is built on, or at least there was a time that was the case. And a majority of the people believed that and even followed it. And a person's belief system is really what determines what and how they think. According to a Gallup International survey of more than 50,000 people in 57 countries, the number of individuals claiming to be religious fell from 77% to 68% between 2005 and 2011. And while those that self-identified as atheists rose by 3%, bringing the world's estimated proportion of adamant non-believers to 13%. So 13% of the world is non-believers. Here in the United States, they had as part of that survey, a drop in religiosity index by country. And globally, overall, it went from 77 down to 68%, a 9% drop. Here in the United States, for that time period, 2005-2012, 73% down to 60%. So a 13% drop in what they consider to be a religiosity index. And that's people that claim that they follow some type of religion. Without a religion or some basis for morality, things can get pretty crazy. James Faust made the statement that without moral progress, stimulated by faith in God, immorality in all its forms will proliferate and strangle goodness and human decency. Mankind will not be able to fully express the potential nobility of the human soul unless faith in God is strengthened. Now, we're definitely living in an age of technological progress. We're able to learn so much more. We have access to so much more information like never before in history, at least in the developed world and this country for sure. But it's clear from our own culture that our moral progress has stopped. And instead, we seem to be progressing along the lines of immorality much faster than we are in terms of even our technological progress. And unfortunately, the schools all promote it. The entertainment industry obviously does a pretty significant job of promoting it. And unfortunately, even our own government promotes it. And the reason being that is, in all cases, it's individuals that are willing to accept it. I think it's because we've forgotten to fear God and keep his commandments. You know, even those that are so-called educated can't see the immorality of their own conditions. Yet the change has to occur on the individual level because that is where the problem starts. Each of us has to build our foundation of morality on God's commandments. So we'll come back right after this commercial break and take a look at some of the confusion in our culture. Okay, we're back here on Power Talk 1210 with Solomon on Blast. John Lennon says all we need to do is give peace a chance. Well, Proverbs 15:2 says the tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. And I thought this was an interesting story from this past week that, at least in my mind, really begs the question, what kind of belief system does this person have? What's the moral basis this person is operating from? And I'm referring to the interview with Chris Matthews from Hardball, where he talks to Marie Harf, who is the deputy spokesperson for the U.S. State Department, about how what America's next move is against ISIS. And I'm sure everybody's heard some of her remarks. You want to play this interview for us, Oscar? And basically, he's asking her, what do we do?
State Department, Marie, this is getting close. And I think the Italians, you know, who had some land in Northern Africa over the years before, are beginning to feel them at their curbside now. And what do we do as Americans when we look at 21 Christians beheaded for the purposes of humiliating us, the Christian world, the Western world? It's aimed at us, those pictures.
Well, I think it just underscores for people that this isn't just a fight in Iraq and in Syria, and that it's not just a fight about dropping bombs on terrorists. It's really how we stop the causes that lead to extremism. In a place like Libya, the fact that there's no governance and there's no opportunity for young people, it lets groups like ISIL grow there and flourish there, which is what you saw with this awful situation with these Egyptians that you just mentioned. But this is a longer fight. It's fighting them on social media. Like you just said, these videos they produce are very technical. They're using social media to get converts to their cause and to spread their hatred all over the world. This week, we're going to have over 60 countries here in Washington to talk about how we combat this violent extremism together in the long term, not just in this short-term fight.
Well, how do we win? How do we stop this? I don't see it. I see the militias from the Shia militias coming out of Baghdad who are all Shia. The Sunnis hate them. The Sunnis are loyal to ISIS rather than going in with the Shia. If I were ISIS, I wouldn't be afraid right now. I didn't figure there's no existential threat to these people. They can keep finding places where they can hold executions and putting the camera work together, getting their props ready, and killing people for show. And nothing we do right now seems to be directed at stopping this.
Well, I think there's a few stages here. Right now, what we're doing is trying to take their leaders and their fighters off the battlefield in Iraq and in Syria. That's really where they flourish.
Are we killing enough of them?
We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. We need, in the longer term, medium and longer term, to go after the root causes that leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs.
Well, we're not going to be able to stop that in our lifetime or 50 lifetimes. There's always going to be poor people. There's always going to be poor Muslims. And as long as there are poor Muslims, the trumpet's blowing. They'll join. We can't stop that, can we?
We can work with countries around the world to help improve their governance. We can help them build their economy so they can have job opportunities for these people. You're right. There is no easy solution in the long term to preventing and combating violent extremism. But if we can help countries work at the root causes of this, what makes these 17-year-old kids pick up an AK-47 instead of try to start a business? Maybe we can try to chip away at this problem while at the same time going after the threat, taking on ISIL in Iraq, in Syria, and helping our partners around the world. I mean, we've seen these horrific pictures from Europe.
And we're going to get rid of juvenile delinquency in America over time by erasing poverty, improving education. Sure, over time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you heard the comments there. How do we get rid of this problem? I'll ask my question again. What really is this woman's basis for the belief system she has? Does she really believe, as she says in there, that in the medium or long term, we just need to help these countries by finding these people jobs? What kind of mindset is that? She mentioned the word governance twice in that particular interview segment. And what does that reveal about her belief system? Is it based on a system of morality? Or is it based on a system of government involvement in every aspect of a person's life? And that's kind of what I think I got out of it, was the government's going to solve all the problems for these people.
It makes no sense. I mean, I asked the same question she asked. What makes them pick up an AK-47 instead of try to start a business? That's not going to be because you're poor. I mean, if you're poor and you have an opportunity to start a business, wouldn't you? Instead of fighting?
Right.
So there's got to be a different reason other than isn't that circular reasoning? They're poor, therefore they fight. They're poor, therefore they don't start a business. No, that's the reason you would want to. You know, yeah. I got dozens of poor family in Mexico, and all of them, you know how many businesses they've started? I mean, they've dozens. Right. I mean, they're all usually like car parts and, right. you know, but repair or whatever.
Her view is if they just had a job, they yeah. wouldn't have so much free time on their hands to go find that AK-47. There's if they just reason. Have a few dollars in their pocket, they'd be content with life and they wouldn't be listening to these ISIS leaders. But that really isn't anywhere near close to what reality is. Does she realize just how clueless she actually sounds? And actually, she reminds me of the character Alicia Silverstone played in the movie Clueless, which was Cher. And honestly, I mean, if you look at her pictures, she even kind of looks like her. You have that clip for me, right, Oscar, with regards to the Clueless movie? This is a trailer from the movie Clueless. Now listen to this girl speak.
So, okay. Like right Here we now, go. For example, the Haitians need to come to America. But some
She's
people
talking about
what
Haiti.
About the strain on our resources? And it's like when I had this garden party for my father's birthday, right? People came that, like, did not RSVP. So I was, like, totally bugging. I had to haul ass to the kitchen, squish in extra place settings, and, like, people were on mismatched chairs and all. But by the end of the day, it was, like, the more, the merrier. And so, if the government could just get to the kitchen, rearrange some things, we could certainly party with the Haitians.
Wow. You guys talk like grown-ups.
See what I'm saying? When I saw, listen to this lady, and honestly, she's got an education, and she's got a master's degree, but she doesn't sound much different.
But all these Muslims are sitting on mismatched chairs.
That's probably really the problem. If we can just get the government to come into the kitchen and rearrange the chairs for them, then everything will be fine. Honestly, it just was too much life acting like a movie to not be able to just look at that and say, am I wrong here? She graduated from Indiana University, BA in political science, earned a master's in foreign affairs from the University of Virginia. She started working at the Directorate of Intelligence for the CIA as an analyst, focusing on Middle Eastern leadership issues. And then she became a spokesperson for the CIA. And during the 2012 presidential election, she helped craft President Obama's national security and communication strategy and also served as a campaign spokeswoman on national security issues. So she's got credentials to some extent. She's young. She's attractive. She speaks well, but she just doesn't seem to have a clue. And one thing out of that whole interview there is that at least to me is fairly obvious is the fact that this woman has never seen someone die in her lifetime, really. Because what was her comment? Chris Matthews says, are we killing enough of them? She responds, we're killing a lot of them. We're going to keep killing more of them. As if it's, she's dealing with a classroom of misbehaving middle school kids instead of a group of people that are have a blatantly different belief system than she can even comprehend, that their belief system is based on their religion. And most likely she'd just faint if she actually had to come face to face with the level of brutality and inhumanity that these people are willing to degrade to. And it really all boils back to the fact that they don't have morality, a good basis for morality. They may have some religion, but not a good basis for morality.
Right. You know, I think in some way they're kind of similar. At least you're right. I mean, especially the leaders, they're focused on this goal of annihilating Westerners, right?
Right.
But a lot of, I think, their foot soldiers have the same problem she does, and that's they don't have a purpose. Something about watching somebody die gives you a perspective of the big picture of saying, wow, you know, life is fleeting and I need to have a purpose in this life. And I think lots of times it's a deeper issue that makes you want to kill somebody.
Definitely. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of this discussion. You want to weigh in? Give us a call, 750-7456. Okay, we're back. Solomon on blast here on Power Talk 1210. Ecclesiastes 8:10, Solomon says, "Then I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This is vanity." Well, in along the lines of that previous story, there's another, I found another blog spot by a gentleman by the name of Rabbi Daniel Lapin, and he had some thoughts on being holy, as he says, but I think it ties very much into the whole morality issue and what the basis for these belief systems are that these people have. He says one of America's most pressing problems is the spread of secularism, and that goes along with the numbers that I mentioned at the beginning. He says the reason that swelling secular sentiment imperils us all is because beliefs have consequences, and that's really what we were looking at with regards to this lady that just doesn't seem to have a clue in terms of what the actual consequences are of somebody's belief system. And so he goes on and says that powerful ideas can be false and lead to great evil, and I think that's what we're seeing with regards to the behavior of these people, ISIS, and in some cases even in our own country. And he says, when enough people believe in a powerful idea, subsequent social and political trends march in step with that idea. He says it was a political genius who thought up the idea of advancing homosexuality by labeling everyone who considered it sinful as hateful and intolerant. When enough people adopt that idea, politicians and pundits sense the groundswell and can be counted on to help validate same-sex marriage. He says, change people's hearts and you change the way they vote. One of his regular mantras is, politics is nothing other than the practical application of people's most deeply held beliefs, and secularism uses emotionally charged words and slogans to promote itself. Even if you're not religious yourself, you should be very scared of a secularized culture, and I think that's kind of what we were alluding to with regards to this lady. She, like I said, she mentioned the word governance twice in there. She talks about having determining the root cause, and to her, the root cause boiled down to people's belief system. So we'll continue in this line of discussion after another quick break. We got to take this break at the half hour. So we'll continue with Rabbi Daniel Lapin's comments here right after we come back from these commercial messages. Give us a call, 750-7456. Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast here. And in this article from Rabbi Lapin, he quotes T.S. Eliot that says, as political philosophy derives its sanctions from ethics and ethics from the truth of religion, it is only by returning to the eternal source of truth that we can hope for any social organization that will not, to its ultimate destruction, ignore some essential aspect of reality. And that really fits in with what we're discussing here. You know, people have a belief in secularism that leads to results that are in opposition to what is really happening out there. I go back to this Lady Maria. She, you know, there's an aspect of it that she almost reflects the mindset of the Obama religion, which is community organizer, right? These people just need the government to come in and organize them and create jobs for them. And but there is an element of poverty in these people's lives, but that poverty is at the same level as her poverty is. She just doesn't really realize it, and that is at a spiritual level. These people have no moral foundation that expects them to consider the lives of somebody else to be valuable and significant as their own is. She thinks the government can come in and solve their lack of morals with jobs, that somehow jobs are just as significant to a person and as their beliefs are, and that there's some kind of moral equivalence to it, which is definitely a sad approach. In this article from Rabbi Lapin, he says there's really good people don't see the consequences of secular policies. And he says one way to clarify is to ask which of the following two choices in each of these three sets comes closest to how a person feels. So the first set is A. He has two questions. One, either humans arrived on the planet by a process of unaided materialistic evolution, it follows that humans are no more than sophisticated animals, or God created us in his image and placed us here. Humans are unique creatures touched by the finger of God. So that's one of his questions that you have to ask yourself. Which of those two beliefs are instrumental in your belief system? And then the second one is, there's no outside source of wisdom and truth. People should look into their own hearts for moral guidance, or people are born knowing no more about morality than about calculus. Most of us are born with an appetite for evil, and we find good by knowing God, loving him, and obeying his word. And then the third one, the two questions you need to consider, he says, the G of government is nearly always good, while business is nearly always bad. Without government regulation, business would run amok. Driven by greed, business relentlessly exploits employees, customers, and the environment. Or the G of God is always good. Business is about serving customers and customer service. So those are the questions that he presents as to what is your belief system. Now, we've got Joe waiting on the line. We'll take his call and see what his belief system is. Joe, good morning. Are you there? Okay, Oscar, one more button. Joe? Nothing. Okay, well, maybe Joe can give us a call back, or we can figure out what's going on with the board here and get the call in. Anyways, those are the three questions, and he says these are three examples how secular belief has become more and more accepted when... And it's changed the way people lead their lives, changed the way they address things, and beliefs do have consequences. And in a lot of cases, these beliefs that are against what this country was founded on result in bad consequences. Do we have them back now? All right, let's give it a try again. Joe, good morning. Welcome to Solomon on Blast.
Hey, you got it.
Yes, we can now.
Good, better than the other way. Well, I don't know. I think that this is kind of like the laws of diminished returns that are coming back on churches in terms of relevancy. You know, what it's the people are looking at it, what have you done for me lately? Because I think churches are really focused on areas that nobody really gives a hoot about because... You know, they're ineffectual with dealing with suffering in a true, meaningful way. Some esoteric valuation of the soul and all the suffering, and you talk about all the morality in the face of the church and not even being able to address things like homosexuality in the church. The thing that they label as a sin, or the thing that you know, they're captivated. They're captured by it. I think homosexuality is rampant in the church and religiosity community. It's just not talked about very much. That's one. And number two is when we're always talking about, like, government this, government that, but we never make the unholy connection of the lobbyist in the mix who is shaping through silent backroom deals, the money changers in the temple. People don't, they use regulation as a wrestling tool to position common people, and, you know, look at the healthcare industry. I mean, we've been doing appendix surgeries forever. The price keeps going up as, you know, we're getting smarter with technology. But at the end of the day, you know, you can't come in here and do price discovery challenges on that or any other institutions because they're a captured entity. And to sit here and always complain about government, but to never make the unholy connection between lobbyists, big power business, and, you know, and morality.
Yeah, what you're basically saying is there's a moral system on both sides of the equation. One is the government individual in the government that's willing to accept the money from the lobbyist, and two, the immorality on the lobbyist side that's willing to pay off the government official or contribute money to the campaign to get what they want. And so, yeah, I agree, Joe, that is definitely a good viewpoint of the immorality that exists. It has to occur on both sides. It's not a one-sided equation, for sure. We appreciate that call, Joe. Thanks for calling. So it's all out there. You know, we have to take a different approach to things, change our belief system if we're going to really fix this. We're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll come back with another story to look at here on Solomon on Blast. We'll be right back after this commercial break. Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast. And actually, it's Solo on Blast. I was telling Oscar here and Jake who walked in. But because Pastor Fred's not here, so we're kind of doing it solo today. But we're still hitting the stories and getting the discussion. In this next story, I would reference Solomon in Ecclesiastes 7:12. He says, "For wisdom is a defense as money is a defense, but the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it, whereas money doesn't." And this story is entitled "Why Crime Needs Cash." And what they're talking about is the whole aspect of having cash in a society in order to, for, and because of cash, is that's what's causing crime. It's the cash that causes crime. He says in this story, "Whether in the form of briefcases of $100 bills or a few 20s stolen from a wallet, cash fuels black markets in both petty and organized crime, but money appears to be headed towards a digital future. What happens to crime when the briefcases go away or at least are less full? Well, according to 6 researchers from the National Bureau of Economic Research in St. Louis and Georgia State, the United States has run a sort of natural experiment over the last two decades. States have gradually implemented national legislation that reforms how welfare benefits are distributed. In their paper, Less Cash, Less Crime, the researchers argue that this reform has reduced the amount of cash held in areas with high rates of street crime, allowing them to investigate the effect of a sudden drop in the availability of physical currency on crime rates. So if we can get all the cash off the streets, in theory, we're not going to have any crime. Strain of law enforcement thinking says in this article has sought an end to cash as a means to fight crime. So can it work? Paper currency is both the motive for many crimes and a facilitator of illegal activity, they say. I'd have to say, I think we go back to where we started from, and that it's really the lack of morality, immorality in our society that is the real root cause, as Maria would want to point out. What is the root cause? That's the real root cause of the crime. It says that organized crime depends on the relative anonymity and untraceability of money. Drug dealing, illegal weapon sales, and other illicit markets all rely heavily on cash transactions. And Spain concluded in 2006 that it was home to one quarter of all the 500 euro notes in circulation. They speculated, and they called these notes the Bin Ladens. That enabled bribery associated with Spain's then booming real estate market, and that individuals and businesses were conducting transactions in cash and off the books to avoid taxes. So the real problem there, it really isn't crime. It's now they're saying that all this cash allowed people to avoid taxes. And you have to wonder, is it a moral issue that's really the basis for this? Because why are people trying to avoid those taxes? It's probably because they don't want to pay it, right? So it's an interesting approach here that they're looking at the cash as being the cause of crime and as the cause for people avoiding taxes. But I think in both cases, there's a moral issue there. We have Mark holding. We got a call in from Mark. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Doug. I love the commentary this morning. My belief is, this is just the version, that we know that what the Bible says, and people have to make a choice between which government they're going to follow. Are they going to follow the government of God, where you laid the foundation? Or are they going to follow the government that has been established, in the human sense?
Right.
And it always gets, my belief is it always gets back to, as you say, morality. We know what's right. We know what's wrong because God spelled it out. But I don't hear any politician really stepping up to the plate because they don't want to jeopardize their job. They don't want to say, it's the same issue.
Mark, we're having a real hard time hearing you. You got a bad connection or something? Kind of cutting in and out every other word. So I agree with your input, and maybe if we can get a better connection, you can call back and we can continue. It's just very hard to hear it all. But yeah, I think we do have to make that choice, like Mark said, which government are we going to follow? And that was kind of the premise for what Rabbi Lapin was saying. Which government? The G government of people or man, or the big G government of God himself. And in looking at this particular article, everything revolved around cash, not people's behavior, not their attitude towards what is right and wrong, but it's all because of cash. That's really where the issue is. So it's an interesting look at what is the real problem. Now, according to the article, there was a drop in crime when they switched over to the digital technology, the use of electronic debit cards for providing these welfare recipients with the money that they needed. So there, obviously, that did help reduce some of the crime. But when you look at this fairly recent issue with regards to Anthem and the 80 million people's identities that were stolen, the information, their social security numbers and everything, is it really going to solve the problem by eliminating cash in our society? Here's a whole environment where things are digital. The information's going to be out there in a digital format. Criminals are still going to look at a way to get to it, whether it's through a cash aspect or whether it's through the non-cash aspect. It really, like I said, boils down to the morality of the people that's going to make the difference. So there's more coming here on Solomon on Blast right after this commercial break. We'll be right back with more. Give us a call, 750-7456. We're back with Solomon on Blast. Jake came into the studio. He actually wants to ask me a question. So, good morning, Jake.
Yeah, good morning, Doug. It's great to be on the show, Solomon on Blast. I wanted to ask you your opinion about the resourcefulness of. You've brought up like welfare recipients. Mm-hmm. Okay, is the idea like I get it? Debit cards, you know,
right.
Less cash. But when you look at like youth today, or even just adults, I mean. Don't you feel like they've already gotten around the system in the sense that they can, I mean, with meth, for instance, where you go into it, you can go into a pharmacy, you can use a debit card and buy all the materials, and then you can concoct it and ruin yourself.
But, right.
I mean, aren't people already resourcefully getting, people are always going to get around.
Right, you they're know? Always going to get it. So by taking cash out of the society, you're not going to solve the problem. By creating digital cash, you're not going to solve the problem at all either. You're right. It all, like I say, it all boils down to that morality issue, whether or not you're willing to do the right thing, and what is the basis for your belief system. People believe that that's okay, they'll do it.
One more question, too. Just because it's legalized in a couple of states, and there are some philosophical reasons for medicinal use of marijuana. I wanted to get your opinion on whether you thought there were any justifications to legalize. I mean, to loosen the prison system up, and just because we know that the fact is that it helps a lot of people that are very sick. I just wanted to know what your thoughts were on that. If you've evolved it all over your years on the earth.
My view is that you can't legislate morality. And people are going to do what they do regardless of what the laws are.
Right.
We criminalize cigarette smokers to the nth degree,
right.
And yet we're now legalizing marijuana smokers and everything else. So it's just, what is your basis for morality if you're going to take those two approaches? They're just so
What do you mean by divert. You criminalize cigarette? What do you mean by that?
Well, you can't smoke anymore anywhere.
Well, that's not criminalizing. It's just
Yeah, it is. You can't smoke in a restaurant. You can't smoke outside. Why? Because supposedly secondhand smoke is bad for everybody else. Well, what? Marijuana smoke isn't? So,
I dig.
My viewpoint is the libertarian approach, right? The less government, the better off that you are.
Right.
And people are going to do what they're going to do as long as you have a basis for real morality based on truth. That's really what's going to control an individual's behavior in society, not the government. The government is there to punish the person that violates the laws that are in place, unfortunately, we put all kinds of laws to try and legislate morality rather than going off the basis of the Ten Commandments and going forward
from
there.
As a 36-year-old, that is becoming more cemented in my – I mean, I understand exactly what you're talking about. It's not something I would have understood 10 years ago. But I just want you to give some advice to people out there who probably might be very moral people, but their quality of life is not so good. There's a lot of depravity. Maybe there's abuse in the house. You know, they can't pay bills. So there's a lot of depression and hopelessness.
Right.
What's your advice about how to – because that's when people turn to other
– Right.
To me, it's like if Doug was sitting next to me and I was in that depraved boat, I just tune you out about morality. So how would you tune them in? I mean, would you get their attention?
You mentioned the word hope. There is no hope, and that is true. Without Christ in people's lives, there is no hope, and that is the absolute difference between the person that has hope and the person that doesn't. There is something tangible in the belief system that they have, and in my belief system, the hope that I have in Christ is what gets me through all of the problems that I see in the world, what allows me to evaluate them, and it also allows me to have hope that, you know what, this can help other people. So that's really the answer. The answer in my mind is Christ and Christ alone.
I just think it's like, because I think it would be important for you to get out but when you run across people that roll their eyes, do you have other, let's just say, you know, you give them the fastball, right? But you have the curve, you have the slider, you have other ways of extrapolating on them? Because I'm just saying that people are going to tune that out.
I think the only way you can do it is your own individual testimony. What changed your life? What made the difference? And that is what made the difference in my life, Christ and Christ alone. We're almost done. So here's a quick one just for you, Jake, for you and Oscar. Islamic State stamps out moral scourge of musical instruments. Yes, the Islamic State ISIS propaganda machine has published photos of its militants in Libya burning musical instruments they said were confiscated in line with the radical group's interpretation of Sharia law. Black-clad gunmen were seen setting fire to a pile of drums, brass, and woodwind instruments at a countryside location, and then watching the fire burning in images posted online by an ISIS media branch. An accompanying message claimed the instrument burning took place in eastern Libya, possibly near the city of Derna. Under the jihad group's rules, instrumental music is banned, as well as what it claims are other un-Islamic activities such as smoking and drinking alcohol. So, sorry, Jake, you ain't going to be able to go over there and
I'll go on one of those droids and drop a bunch of trombones down in Libya there.
So, you know, your show is just not going to make it over there in the Middle East. Sorry, Jake.
All right. You're right.
Well, that's pretty much it for us here on Solomon on Blast this week. As always, we want you to keep thinking wisely and living wisely. Until next week, we'll see you.